Hello, everyone. My name is Tan, and today I'm going to tell you about HardFS. It's all about how we harden ADFS with selective and lightweight versioning. This is a joint work with Tyler, Inchiles, and my advisors, Andran Ramsey, Apache Dussault, and Haryadi Gunawi. As you all know, today cloud systems are complex pieces of software. They run on top of thousands of commodity machines, and as a result, rare failure become frequent. And we all agree that failure detections and recovery has to come from the software, and it must be a first-class operations. There are two kinds of failure modes that this cloud system need to handle: fail-stop and fail-silent failure. Fail-stop failures, such as machine crashes, these failures are pretty much handled nowadays. And in fact, today's systems are built to crash. They have sophisticated crash recovery techniques such as data replications, logging, failing over, and so on. However, fail-silent failures are much harder to deal with. In this work, we refer to fail-silent failures as the scenarios where the system do not crash but exhibit incorrect behavior. In today's large-scale and virtualized environment like data center with thousands of physical machines and many software layers, things can go wrong silently. Memory could be corrupted, software bug could manifest in productions, making the system behave incorrectly instead of crashing. The yellow circle here represents a node in a discrete system. As you can see, a faulty node can send bad messages to other nodes or write bad transactions to the disk. And in this case, crash recovery is useless because the fault is already spread. That is why we often see fail-silent failure headlines every once in a while. And the question is, what can you do to improve these situations? One can use replicate state machines to handle fail-silent failure. In this approach, given a node in the system, we're going to replicate the full state of that node so that we have multiple replicas, and then we're going to connect that replicas using Byzantine fault torrent library. The other approach is to use n-version programming in which the developer write complete multiple versions of the system and then coordinate them in some way. However, we argue that this approach requires high resource consumptions, require high engineering effort, and therefore they are rarely deployed in practice. In this work, we introduce a new approach which incurs small overhead and less engineering effort. We call this approach selective and lightweight versioning. The basic idea is that, given a system such as ADFS, we're going to sleeve each node in the system with a second implementation or the sleeve layer. This sleeve layer is very simple. It's had a very basic model of how the node should behave. For instance, when a node receives a message, it should do some I/O or it should send some output message. So the sleeve layer observes inputs and output coming in and out of the system in order to detect and isolate fail-silent behavior. And the intuition behind sleeve is that we argue that, like, by crashing earlier is better than to tell a lie. And by crashing earlier, we prevent fault to propagate throughout the systems. And when the faulty node reboots, we are able to recover the state of the faulty node by reloading its state from trusted sources such as other nodes across network or the persistent storage. These sources are trusted because faults has not propagated. And that is exactly what we do in this paper. So the sleeve layer around each node turns bad behavior into crashes, and it exploits crash recovery machinery of current system for recovery. So why being selective and lightweight? Well, we don't want to go with full version programming, so we want to be selective because our goal is to obtain small engineering effort. And the basic idea behind this is that some part of the system are worth protecting than others. For instance, the sleeve layer could focus on protecting the bug-sensitive part, where when the bug occurs, you know, the consequence could be very severe, such as data loss. Second, the sleeve layer could focus on protecting the frequently changed part, where it is more likely to contain bugs than the stable one. And finally, some part of the system are currently being protected, you know, and we can just focus on the currently unprotected parts, such as the exposed system in memory metadata. By being lightweight, we avoid completely replicating full state of the system, so we don't want 100% of memory overhead. And to do so, we use encoding techniques to reduce the space. Using the sleeve approach, we had three important functionality of ADFS: namespace management, replica management, read-write protocols, and built a new robust system we call HardFS. Our experiments show that HardFS is able to detect and recover from a wide range of failed silent scenarios caused by random memory corruptions, targeted memory corruptions, and real-world software bugs. Now, I know I haven't told you yet, but beyond failure detections, HardFS is able to perform micro recovery, which is a lot faster than full reboot in certain cases. And it is able to do so with little space and perform on overhead. Here's the slide for the rest of the talk. Next, I'm going to talk a little bit about HardFS design. Then I'm going to touch on the implementation detail. Finally, I'm going to give you some evaluation results and conclude. Let's take a look at a case study to see why HardFS is useful. So in this case study, we want to verify the file hierarchy and corresponding operations. And remember that we are being selective, so we can choose to protect parts that we think that are important. So in normal operations, the client sends a request, creating file F to the ADFS master. The master put F in its memory, write corresponding transactions. Now let's say F is corrupted to G, and another client wants to check the existence of F. In this case, we have an incorrect behavior because according to the master, file F does not exist. In case of HardFS, because the sleeve layer maintains additional file hierarchy information, when the client checks for the existence of F, the sleeve layer is able to detect there's a disagreement and is able to recover the corrupted state from trusted sources. So the sleeve layer contains following component. It first had an interpolation model to understand semantic of external I/O, such as this access on network meshes. Our approach is not intrusive because we only interpose on external I/O. Second, the sleeve layer have a state manager to maintain the state in a selective and lightweight manner. Third, it had an action verifier to detect incorrect action. And finally, there's a recovery module to perform necessary recovery actions. Now, the state manager. Remember, we are being selective. So the state manager only maintains important state of the main versions. For instance, in HardFS, to verify namespace integrity, the sleeve layer only maintains directory entry without modification time. And of course, we can add state to the sleeve layer incrementally. For instance, one can add permission information for a security check. And to update the state correctly, we need to understand semantic of various protocol messages and threat event. And finally, to reduce the space overhead, we use encoding technique to compress the state. Let's see why we need to compress the state. Well, a naive approach is to use full state replications. So upon a file F creation, we can simply put the concrete state of F in a sleeve layer. And doing so, we're going to incur like 100% of memory overhead. And in practice, an ADFS master could manage millions of files, and by incurring 100% of memory overhead, it didn't reduce ADFS master scalability. So that's why we use lightweight encoding techniques to reduce the space overhead. And although there are many ways to do it, in our design, we use accounting Bloom filters to store the state. Accounting Bloom filter is space efficient structures. It supports three APIs: insert, delete, and exit effect. Let's take a look at an example. Say there's an operation indicating that F is newly created and have 10 bytes. And of course, the sleeve layer needs to remember this fact. And to do so, it uses the Bloom filter API to insert the fact that F is now 10 bytes into its state. Now say that the main version is corrupted somehow, such as F is now 5 bytes. And another client say, hey, give me length of F. In this case, the sleeve layer is able to detect the disagreement simply by using the Bloom filter API to check to see that if the fact F is 5 bytes exit and the answer is no, and boom, there's a disagreement. So we find that the Bloom filter is very suitable for Boolean checking. The sleeve layer with the Bloom filter is able to perform Boolean checks such as .5f exists, .f has length x, has block b been allocated, and so on. However, there are some challenges. The first challenge is that because the Bloom filter only supports yes-no verifications, it is hard to use Bloomfilter to versioning stateful system like ADFS, we need to update the state constantly. And second, Bloomfilter itself can have false positive. The first challenge. To version stateful system like ADFS, we need to update the state constantly. So come back to our previous example. Suppose then there's an append operation now indicating that f is now 20 bytes instead of 10 bytes. And the sleep layer needs to remember this new fact. And to do so, it's first need to ask, okay, what is the length of f? And then it needs to remove the old fact and insert the new fact into the Bloom filters and then update the state. But the problem here is that the Bloom filter APIs do not support this kind of question, like what is the length of f? It only supports yes-no questions. So that's the challenges. So to overcome this problem, we observe that we have two versions. We have redundant state. And as long as the two versions agree on a certain fact, we know that that fact is correct. So we call this technique ask and check. So in order to update the new fact that f is now 20 bytes instead of 10 bytes, the sleep layer first asks the main version for the what is the size of f. And because the main version cannot be trusted completely, the sleep layer uses Bloomfilter APIs to verify that f is indeed 10 bytes. And if it is, it simply removes the old fact and add a new fact indicating that f is now 20 bytes. So to sum up, we use Bloomfilter for lightweight space, and Bloomfilter is great for Boolean verifications. However, because we want to version, we want to check stateful system, we need to introduce a new technique called ask and check that I just mentioned with you. Now, the second challenge is a false positive. As you all know, Bloomfilter can give you false positive, but to us, false positive only means unnecessary recovery, in which you crash and reboot the faulty nodes and reload the bad state from trusted sources. More detail can be found in the paper. So I just covered the lightweight part of HDFS. Let me turn our attention to the selective part. So why we want selective? Well, ideally, we want to check everything of the system, but doing so is going to be like an end version, like full end version programming. And remember that our goal is to obtain small engineering effort. That is why we do selective check. So for instance, in the example, we want to protect namespace integrity and corresponding operation, and we exclude security check. And to do so, the sleep layer interposes unrelated I/O, like such as file creation requests and transaction and so on. For instance, when a client send a request to Gratify app, the sleep layer interposes on this message, and it's put f into its state. Now let's say f corrupted to g. Another client want to check the existence of f. In this case, the sleep layer is able to detect there's a disagreement. As you can see, by being selective, we can write very simple check in four lines of code, like this. And in these examples show you an incorrect action that we classify as a corrupt actions. But beyond corrupt action, there are many more classes of incorrect actions, which I will show you here. So we've just seen corrupt action, but we further classify there's a missing action in which the system forget to do a certain operation when receiving a request. There's an orphan action when the system do something without the original request. And of course, and finally, there's an out of order actions. So more detail can be found in papers, but I want to emphasize that all of these things happen in practice. So that is the job of the action verifier to detect on the incorrect action that I just mentioned. And to do so, the action verifier maintain a set of microcheck together with a bunch of mechanism. More detail can be found in the paper. I'm not going to talk about it here. Now, when an incorrect action is detected, the recovery module kick in. So let's talk about recovery part. Remember from the beginning that I told you that crashing is good in today's system. And indeed, it's better to crash early than to lie. And the sleep layer around each node in HDFS detect the bad behavior and immediately turn them into crashes. And HDFS exploits existing recovery mechanism of ADFS to recover or to reload the state of the faulty node from trusted sources. And again, these sources are trusted because we prevent error from propagating throughout the system before. So in terms of recovery, we distinguish two classes of recovery in HDFS. The first is a naive full recovery, which we call crash and reboot, and second is micro recovery. So in full micro recovery, it's very simple. When the phone is detected, we simply crash the node and reboot it, and then the full state of the node is reconstructed from trusted sources. However, there's a problem with full recovery because in some cases, full recovery may be very, very expensive. And I'm going to show you later, like restarting an ADFS master could take hours. So to overcome this expensive full recovery, we perform a technique that we call micro-recovery. So in micro-recovery, we leverage the fact that now we have two versions. So we can simply compare the state in two versions and pinpoint the corrupted state and repair only the corrupted state from trusted sources without a full reboot. And of course, when micro-recovery fails, we fall back to full reboot. Let's take a look at an example to see how we can micro-recover corrupted state. So let's say the correct length of F is 100 byte, and the two versions disagree on the length of F. Because we only have two versions, we don't know which one is right and which one is wrong. Therefore, in this case, we leverage the trusted sources, that is a checkpoint file, and we use the majority voting rule to pinpoint the corrupt version. In this case, it is the main version, and repair and micro-recovery the main version is very simple because we can directly update the state of main versions. As simple as that. Well, however, if the corrupted version is the sleep layer, it is more challenging. Remember, because we are being lightweight, we put everything in the state of the sleep layer into the Bloom filters. And in this case, ideally, to repair this state, we need to use Bloom filter API to first delete the corrupt fact and then insert the correct fact, right? But the problem here is that the sleep layer do not know F has been corrupted to 200 bytes to ask the questions. That is the problem. And then to solve this problem, our solution is to start with an empty Bloom filters and we add the correct fact as they are verified. So I just covered the design section. Let me touch briefly on the implementation detail. So we had using the sleeve approach, we had three important functions of ADFS, namespace management, replica management, and read-write protocols. And to write the logic of the second version, we only use three Bloom filter APIs and the ask and check technique for non-Boolean verifications. Because of time constraint, I will briefly talk about namespace management. Remember, we are being selective. So in namespace management, we only protect namespace structures necessary for reaching data, such as file hierarchy, file to block mapping, and file length informations. And by doing so, we want to detect and recover from namespace related problems, such as corrupt file to block mapping, unreachable files, and so on. So this table is a bit scary, but it is a concrete example of how a developer can use Bloom filter APIs and ask and check technique to program the logic of the second version. For instance, in the first row here, when a client sends a request to create file F, we simply use Bloom filter API to check the existence of F, and if F doesn't exist before, we insert F into our Bloom filter and generate corresponding actions. In the second row, the client asks the master to allocate a new block to file F, and on the entry part, we use ask and check technique to verify the correct, to verify the mapping information to see if it's correct. And if it is, on the return part, we simply use Bloom filter API to update the new information. Now, I'm gonna show you some evaluation result. We ask following questions. Is HardFS robust against fail silent fault? How much time and space overhead does HardFS incur? Is micro-recovery significantly faster than full reboot? And finally, how much engineering effort do we spend to develop HardFS? To answer the first questions, we conducted following experiment, like in which we inject random memory bit flip into the master of ADFS and HardFS, and we run some workload and we measure the outcome. And here's the result. Let me walk you through this. Well, the first notable thing is that although HardFS is not 100% silent failure free, it actually does reduce the number of fail silent failure by a factor of 10. It is able to do so because all silent behaviors is detected and turned into recovery either using full recovery or micro recovery. Here's some more interesting results. We actually crash the system twice as often. But it's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. Remember that I told you throughout the talk, crashing is good. Why? Because current system are built to crash as long as we prevent error to propagate. And that is exactly what we've done here. And so in HardFS, we trade availability for data correctness and safety. And of course, there are some other outcomes like the system hang or the fault is latent that we cannot observe anything. Now, the breakdown of silent failure, so the benefit of selective protection. So the most common silent failure with HardFS is the corruption of modification time, which is understandable because we choose not to protect this field. There's only one case that's dangerous, the corruption of block size. Also, HardFS choose to protect this field. Somehow our aggressive injection methodology make the system make the checks misbehave or cause a two version corrupt in the same way. But it's very difficult to produce this case. We also measure the overhead of HardFS by varying the number of files in the system and measure the amount of memory allocated to the masters. The y-axis show you how much memory is allocated. And as you can see from this graph, HardFS with Bloom filter only incur 2.6% of memory overhead, which is great. Now, the recovery time. We measure the recovery time of two methods, full recovery and micro recovery. So the x-axis show you the number of files in the system, and the y-axis show you the recovery time in log scale in second. So as you can see, full reboot of master is very expensive. It could take hours to reboot a file system of 1 million files. Because most of the time spending on waiting for the work kernel to send a block report and processing them before the file system can be usable. On the other hand, HardFS is able to perform micro recovery lots and lots faster than a full reboot. It is able to perform micro recovery in seconds instead of hours. Now, in terms of engineering effort, we measure the number of line of code that we spend to develop HardFS, and by being selective and lightweight here, you can see that our lightweight version is much smaller than the original in ATFS. And of course, there are other parts of the code that we choose not to protect it. And finally, we took 5 real-world bugs in ATFS that may cause data loss and reintroduce them into our code base. We limited ourselves to reintroducing buggy code, to injecting delay, to drop messes, and our results show that HardFS is able to handle all of the bugs and prevent their loss from happening. To conclude, I told you throughout the talk that crashing is good. In today's system, thanks to many efforts spent over many years to develop crash recovery techniques, and in fact, it is better for a member of the system to die and be reborn freshly than to tell a lie. But as I show you from the previous slide, lies do happen in reality. And that is the motivation for us to work on this paper. HardFS successfully turned lies into crashes, and it's leveraged existing crash recovery techniques to resurrect. And we hope that the sleep approach can be applied beyond HardFS. So thank you for listening, and I'm very happy to take questions.
Don Derner, Quantum Corporation. Can you provide any quick insight into how you represent facts in a form that's suitable for storage in a Bloom table? That's the first part of the question. Second part of the question is, it appeared that you had a delete operation to remove a fact from the Bloom table. And I don't quite understand how this can be done for reasons that the Bloom table may not count references, and also for the reason that of the false positive problem. And third, can you confirm that you had to, for your micro recovery, that you had to provide mechanisms to reach in and recover data structures? So the sleeve actually had to reach in to the first version. Is that correct?
Yes. The third question is that's correct. So, okay, I forgot about the first question. You have too many questions. Oh, how to present the fact that to check the Bloom filters. Yeah, well, it's really depend on the case study, because remember that the Bloom filter only supports the yes or no verifications, and it's really depend on the property that you want to check in order to encode the fact into the Bloom filter. Like, if you want to check for file existence, then the full path name is okay. But if you want to check for file length, then that should be like a full path name and a file length, and the similar story for like file to block mapping. Yeah, my point is like, it really depends on the property you want to check. There's no like magic rule that, you know, general rule that you can apply. And what is the second question again? Oh, the delete in Bloom filter. Actually, we use the counting Bloom filters, and you were right. The count reference might have exist, but we haven't taken a look into that. Yeah.
Brent Welch from Panassus. So I guess I'm worried about the failure mode where if you get the right kind of false negative, you'll decide to crash the system because you're not sure. Why doesn't the system stay in that state? So you come up, they retry that operation, you come up with the same incorrect decision to crash the system. So how do you get out of a crash loop? Or am I not understanding the consequences of that failure mode?
Wait, is your question as well, like if you crash and reboot again and there's a problem, right? And what are we doing with that? Well, of course, that can be happen. Because if you have a fault or a bug that are deterministic, crash and reboot doesn't help, right? And in this case, we do have a mechanism to remember how many times we crash and reboot consecutively. Like, if you exceed the limit, we're going to stop the system completely because we know that, well, we cannot fix it anyway. That there needs to be some, like, attention from the developer or the system administrator. Yeah.
Jeff Canning, Harvey Mudd College. I'm confused by your statement that false positives are okay because they just lead to an unnecessary recovery. So it seems to me that if the true length of file F is 10 and it gets corrupted to be 5 and you go check the condition length of F is 5 and you get a false positive, then you would go merrily on your way without ever detecting the error.
You said that I could have false negative, right?
Well, it seems to me that a false positive is a false negative in the sense of detecting an error, because what you're checking is a particular condition, and if the condition you're checking is F is length 5, and you get a false positive that is listed in the Bloom filter as being a true Boolean condition, then you will not detect that the length of F has changed.
Well, I agree. That is the kind of cases that if the main version is corrupt to 5, and then the Bloom filter also exhibit, you know, the same false positive that indicating the fact that F is also 5, then we do not catch that case. Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Rick Splane from Apple. So I think that the idea is quite insightful, and I like the paper. The only thing I would caution is the idea that you measured your Bloom filter overhead as being 2.6%. I think you may have to revisit that measurement, though, as file systems have to store more complex data and files get smaller and smaller, because Bloom filters grow linearly with the number of facts that you have to store, not logarithmically or any other lee. So I guess in my own experience, I've seen Bloom, you know, with 20 or 30 gigabyte databases, I've seen Bloom filters to run point queries on those databases go up to the hundreds of megabytes. So it's something that I think you have to consider.
Okay, thanks.
Microsoft Research, thanks for the work. I had one question, maybe you can clear this up for me. What if the first manifestation of the problematic master is that it doesn't send a bad message to a client, it sends a bad message to the checkpoint file. It tries to write the erroneous data to the checkpoint file. Is there anything you can do to stop that?
I'm sorry, can you rephrase the question?
Suppose that, so the master breaks in some way and mm-hmm. has some error, mm-hmm. and the first thing that it does wrong is to write that wrong information to the checkpoint file.
Mm-hmm.
Can you catch that and stop that?
Yes. In fact, in our implementation, we not only check the message, but we also check the disk I/O. Yeah.
So if that's the case, then it seems like a... I caught you! No. If that's the case, then it seems that a bug in sleeve could cause a total failure, because if sleeve can stop you from writing to the checkpoint file, which is what you're relying on as the ultimate arbiter of correctness, mm-hmm. then ultimately a bug in sleeve just is a bug in the whole system.
Well, this is tricky. I need to think about it a little bit, and then can take it apply if you're okay with that.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you.